What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast, where we talk about all things financial, financial freedom, financial fun. Today, we're going to be talking about open enrollment and benefits through your work because tis the season, right, Sim? Sim is joining with me today again.
Hey, everybody. I'm so excited because I love open enrollment. It is like shopping. I mean, these are things you have to buy anyway, but oh gosh, any excuse to spend money and you get to protect yourself.
Yeah. All of these benefits we're going to be chatting about today, really a lot of it comes down to protection. And that is a crucial foundational part to your financial plan. And thankfully, with employer benefits, if you have employer benefits, or if you're creating your own benefits package. So don't tune off if you're a business owner, because some of these things you need anyways, and you could create these or build these yourself. But a lot of these have to do with protection and just protecting your plan. And the employer a lot of times is able to subsidize a lot of this cost. So it's not as expensive as if, you know, if you were going out and finding these things independently. Sorry, business owners, but it's a business deduction if you're a business owner listening to this.
And if you're a W-2, a lot of these might be tax deductible.
Yeah, very good point. And that certainly comes into play with student loans, because we talk about reducing adjusted gross income quite a bit. So these benefits do play a part in that. So you are probably like a lot of folks right now, where you got a giant package of benefit information dumped on your desk or sent to you in like a big PDF. And you're trying to figure out, okay, what do I need to pay attention to? Like, yeah, I know I need health insurance. Yeah, maybe dental, vision. Like, what is all this other stuff though? Or like, how can I customize these things to really make the most out of my benefits? That's what we're going to be chatting about today.
Yeah, so let's talk about the biggie, because this is probably the one that most people care about first, which is health insurance. You got to have health insurance. It's so expensive. If God forbid you have an emergency, right? And you have to pay that out of pocket, right? That's a catastrophic situation. That's why we get insurance. It is supposed to protect us from these catastrophic situations. There's different types of health insurance plans. There's pros and cons to each of them. For most folks, this is a pre-tax deduction. So even though it can be very expensive, especially if you're getting like a self and spouse or self and family policy, you are getting a deduction for that. Let's start with HMOs, which is a health maintenance organization. Those tend to be cheaper than some of the other types out there. There is a catch. And the catch is that they typically require you to choose a physician that's in network. And then if you need to see like a specialist or something, you typically need a referral. So you can't just, you know, be like, hey, I want to go to the gastroenterologist. Like, you need to go to your primary care provider, have an appointment, get a referral. So it's a little bit more restrictive in that sense. These HMOs, they tend to have lower premiums, which is why a lot of people go for them, and lower out-of-pocket costs.
Got it. And flexibility-wise, they could be good for, like you said, cost. But if you are very particular about who you want to work with, doctor-wise or practice-wise, this might be the limiting factor that you want to think about. I think these plans emphasize preventative care, which I think a lot of plans have preventative care built into the policy itself. So that's not so different between these different types of coverage. What about PPOs? I think this is where a lot of people get hung up. They're like, okay, there's HMO, there's PPO, there's high deductible healthcare plan, which is HDHP, right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Which one is best for me? Let's talk about PPOs, and then we'll talk about high deductible plans, and we can filter in like who's best for maybe what or what you should be considering.
Yeah. So I really like PPOs. Everyone who knows me, not a surprise. I'm a control freak. I like my choices. I like to be able to choose what I want and when I want them and to see who I want. So I typically go for a PPO, which is a preferred provider organization. You know, if I want to see like that endocrinologist or that ENT, or, you know, I have like my little team of doctors I like to see, I don't need to make an appointment with my primary care. I don't need to get a referral. I can just go to who I want. There's an asterisk next to that, because there are some providers who still require a referral. And that's just a provider specific thing. It's not because of the health insurance type that you have. They just want to, I guess, limit how many people are making frivolous appointments. So kind of outing myself there, frivolous appointments. But with a PPO, they do tend to be a little bit more expensive. You're paying for some of that flexibility. So they do tend to have higher premiums and higher out-of-pocket costs. But the main benefit is the flexibility. Now, the HDHP, the high deductible health plan, where that comes into play is kind of like how it sounds. It has to do with your deductible. With the high deductible health plan, that actually has a set definition. for this tax year, 2024, what they consider to be a high deductible is if you are for an individual, $1,600 or more. There's an out-of-pocket maximum. Don't forget the out-of-pocket maximum. I have made this mistake where I thought someone had a high deductible health plan because they met the first prong, right? They had a deductible that was $1,600 or more, but the out-of-pocket maximum was too high. So the out-of-pocket maximum is $8,050. Mm-hmm. And so the deal with these plans, what makes it attractive, because you're like, well, why would I want a high deductible? Like, why wouldn't I want more of that cost to be, you know, shared with the insurance company? Well, a big benefit is, one, you're probably going to be in a plan where you're someone who's young, healthy, like this is the profile of someone who it might make sense for. You're not going to the doctor very much. And so typically health insurance plans that have a high deductible have lower premiums. So you're saving money that way. Additionally, if you have a true high deductible health plan and has those out-of-pocket max built in, you can be eligible to open and fund what's called an HSA, which is a health savings account. My favorite retirement account. If you can have a favorite retirement account, grab drinks with me. I'll tell you all about HSAs. What's so great about them? Well, it is a way to pre-tax save money for your health insurance costs. And when do you think, Megan, is a time in someone's life when you're going to have a lot of health insurance costs?
When I'm old and dried up like a raisin.
Yes, exactly. Old and dried up like a raisin because you didn't have a good skincare routine. So what you can do now, I'm assuming most of our listeners are in their 30s. So if you have an HSA, you put the money in there, right? You get your tax deduction. This is pre-tax money. And then invest it. Don't leave it in cash unless you need the cash, right? But presumably, it's going to grow. I say presumably because there's no guarantees with anything. But that money is going to sit and grow. And it's going to grow for like 2 or 3 decades. And so by the time you are a little old raisin and you have all these expenses, right, for your healthcare, you have this bucket of money that you can pull from. And all of the growth in that account is tax-free. And there's really no other account like that where you have this triple tax advantage, where you're getting a tax deduction today, which is really valuable for you, by the way, if you're going for student loan forgiveness. You get a tax deduction today. The growth in that account is tax deferred, and then you pull the money out and it's tax free if you're using it for qualified medical expenses. That is supposed to be one of the main benefits if you have a high deductible health plan. I so wish that they would allow like anybody to open an HSA and they don't. So what you really need to weigh, and you probably need to do some math, but you need to sit down and figure out realistically, what do you think you will need to spend on medical bills for yourself? How many primary care visits do you typically have? How many specialists do you think you'll need to see? If you have kids, it's really hard to do this. You don't know if your kids are going to be super well-behaved or they're going to fall off the monkey bars and break their arm. Mm-hmm. So I like to throw in a couple of buffers.
Maybe. Wait, why did you say that specifically? The monkey bars for kids?
I saw this happen to someone. I was always good. I never wanted the monkey bars, but I saw someone fall off and hurt themselves. And I just always remember that.
Okay. Well, what's hilarious is I was one of those kids that fell off bars and broke my arm.
That's so funny.
Actually, I didn't break it. It was a hairline fracture, but I was still in a cast for like 8 weeks as a first grader.
Well, you still cost your parents a lot of money. So hopefully they planned for that. So these are the kinds of things you have to think about. What's the buffer that you're building into your healthcare costs? And then you have to look at, you know, what are your tax savings by doing the HSA? What are your out-of-pocket maximums, your deductibles, your co-pays? You kind of need to sit down. It's a little bit of a math puzzle. If you don't feel like doing it, you can like work with a financial planner and do it with them live as you're evaluating your choices. Mm-hmm. But those are kind of high level the things to think about. So there's the financial piece. What are you paying out of pocket? And then there's the non-financial piece. How much choice do you want in choosing your healthcare providers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And health insurance is extremely important. And a lot of folks that are graduating, maybe more so recently, they may have been on their parents' healthcare plan for a while. And maybe you still are, because you can be on your parents' healthcare plan until you're 26, I think, 26 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's literally what I did. Until I was 26, I was on my mom's healthcare plan because it was just so much cheaper and I wasn't at a job that offered benefits. You might not be ready for this transition into purchasing your own health insurance yet, or maybe this is the year, or maybe you're just like, now you're really starting to think about your benefits a little more. It really is a protection measure because healthcare costs, especially emergencies, can really add up. They can get to a point where they're draining your emergency savings because you're having to pay out of pocket for everything, that you're, if you don't have coverage, that you're having to do. And so the health insurance is that buffer against those emergency expenses, and they come along with like preventative care that you don't necessarily have to pay out of pocket for, or if you do, it's like a small copay or something. So it helps you just stay healthy to prevent future health problems on an ongoing basis, but also prevents like catastrophic things that you have no control over, like a car accident or getting really sick or having a bad allergic reaction or something. So health insurance in my book is a non-negotiable. Could you self-insure? Not, I don't know. Convince me otherwise, but I think most people need health insurance.
Yeah. And for folks who are super like skeptical of it, I say just get like the cheapest bare bones policy and then maybe build up your cash buffer to cover like the deductible or out of pocket max, which would probably be very high. But that's kind of your worst case scenarios. You have a bare bones policy and then you have something catastrophic happen.
Yeah. And then you have the coverage for like above and beyond like what your deductible is, but you didn't pay a ton of premium, you know, over the course of the year to have that coverage, which is nice, which is a lot of times what people stress over is like the high premiums of HMO or the PPO plans. So high deductible plans could be a good option for decently healthy people that don't anticipate using coverage except for preventative care or emergencies or unexpected things.
Some employers will give you free money, by the way, into your HSA or like on your paycheck if you don't have a high deductible plan, if you do certain like health activities. So that could be something to look out for. I know some people don't like them because it's like, oh, my employer has like my health data, but you know, it depends how secure you really think your data is anyway. But yeah, it's another way that you can get, you know, a little cash. My husband's old job would put like $1,000 into your HSA if you did the all the things like, you know, I walked this many steps and you kind of just self-report.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah.
And you did say, so just one last note on the HSA and we'll move on. You said you love HSAs for retirement. It's your favorite retirement bucket. It absolutely can be considered a retirement bucket, exactly how you were explaining. That's the strategic, really cool way to use an HSA. But you could also use the HSA money if you need to, if you're strapped for cash, like you are participating in a high deductible plan and you need the cash to pay for the copays or whatever you had to come out of pocket for, like that money is still available to pay those health insurance costs, which is something that you have in your back pocket if your emergency savings wasn't there.
Yeah, you still get that tax deduction. What I tell people to do that I follow myself, I follow my own advice, is that I am trying to use it as a retirement account. And so I save receipts for all my medical bills, maybe not like the super teeny tiny ones. It's like $5 for medication, but anything that's like $50 or more, I'll take a photo of that receipt and stick it in a Dropbox. That way, if like, God forbid, I should have like some kind of major financial emergency in 10 years and I need to like pull cash from different places, I can reimburse myself for those medical bills in 10 years. I have the receipt to prove that I'm pulling it out of my HSA for a qualified medical expense. So that's cool. Imagine that, like, you know, instead of using that $50 today for my HSA, I left the $50 alone. What is that $50 going to be worth in 10 years?
It's going to be worth a lot
more than 50. I don't know what the math is, but yes. So if you need it, it's there. If you can, try not to use it, but it's there.
Well, good. So health insurance, that's kind of the big stake of this conversation. You know, now we'll start getting into the vegetables, the potatoes, like all the sides. So dental and vision insurance, this is sometimes included in the health insurance, depending on your health insurance plan. A lot of times, though, it is separated. So you'll have a payroll deduction for dental and vision insurance separately. Dental insurance, I'm a big fan of. I'm a huge fan of getting your checkups every 6 months. And dental insurance usually covers that for routine checkups and routine care. And of course, they catch issues like cavities or things, you know, over time, even like random things. Like I had a grinding problem. Have you ever grinded your teeth?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How I carry my stress.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like causing some, like my jaw was in pain. And so my dental coverage was able to cover quite a bit of the, what is it? The mouthpiece or whatever I used for a while that helped a lot. So I appreciate my dental insurance. Vision insurance, I do have as part of my policy, but I don't wear glasses. I don't need them yet, knock on wood, but my husband does. So we do carry vision insurance for glasses and things like that.
And usually with dental and vision, you don't really have a choice. It's like, this is the policy you have available. Take it or leave it.
Sometimes there's like a kind of preventative care plan. And then there's like a really nice plan maybe for orthodontics. I've seen that a couple times where like some policies will have like an orthodontics clause where some of the orthodontics is covered, which if you have kids that might need that could be worth it. But, you know, generally a dental and vision insurance, typically like it's a wash, like you pay the premium, the costs of what you could have paid out of pocket, like it works out to be about the same, but you have the insurance in case something more serious happened is how I kind of look at it.
Yeah.
Next up, life insurance.
Let's talk about life insurance. So if you've worked with me, I'm probably going to contradict myself a little bit, but if you worked with me, you've probably heard me say that an individual policy is more so the way to go than these like group policies. And that's because for most group life insurance policies, you can't take it with you if you change jobs. It doesn't have what's called portability. That's not true for every policy. That's just generally the case. So with the individual policy, it's great because when you buy it, you're locking in the premium, assuming you're getting like a term policy. That premium is good for the life of the policy. If you get like a 30-year term, your premium is not going to change during that 30 years. The group life policy can always change from year to year because it's a negotiated group rate that your employer is getting. So depending on how many claims are coming in, hopefully there's not many because that means someone died. That is one piece. But here's where I'm going to contradict myself. I think there is a case to be made for some people to get it through their employer. This can be someone who maybe for one reason or another might not pass medical underwriting to get an individual policy.
For most
of the group ones, you don't need medical underwriting unless you're trying to get like a certain amount. I think it's like, and I've seen this with some employers where they're like, you can buy X times your income. You can get like 3, 4, 5 times your income. But if you try to get more than a certain amount of your income, then they may ask you for evidence of insurability. But typically you are able to get some coverage without providing that. You can also usually get some coverage for your spouse and your children, which hopefully you never need to use, but it's pretty cheap that way.
Yeah. Dirt cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do have it for all of us and hopefully we never need it. And the one for the spouse and kid, I usually kind of just think about as like a burial policy more than like anything else, because it doesn't really give you that much. It's usually like 50 to 100,000 for spouse and something like 10,000 to 15,000 for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
One thing to know is that any employer provided group life policy that exceeds $50,000 in value is considered taxable income to you. And it's not going to be very much, but it is something just to be aware of. If you kind of see that on your pay stub, you're like imputed, it usually says like imputed life insurance or something, that you're paying a few bucks because your employer is paying some of it.
Yeah. I kind of think about the life insurance from your employer as like a base, like a baseline. Like it makes sense to at least have the base because it's usually dirt cheap and you can supplement or get your own policy on top of that. But a lot of times, most of the time, it is not going to be your full need. It's not going to cover your full need. That's where the independent life insurance could be really important. And a lot of times, most times, the premium is going to be fixed with an independent policy. So you don't have to worry about the price changing on you. And of course, you don't have to worry about not having coverage if you were to change jobs or your job were to break up with you.
This is different, by the way, from, and I get this question a lot because there's like lots of little supplemental things you can get, like accidental death and
dismemberment. That's a good point. Yeah.
There's all these little ones, or like the group hospital indemnity, right? Like all these little ones you can get. And I get that question, like, Sim, should I get them? The purpose of insurance is to insure against the most catastrophic things. We're not trying to like spend all of our money just on insurance. Even if it's like cheap, it still kind of adds up over time because you have all your other policies outside of open enrollment. You also have like, you know, homeowners, renters, umbrella, all that. So it can add up. The AD&D is like a very specific set of circumstances has
to happen. Accidental death and dismemberment. Yeah, it's like you have to die on a Tuesday when it was raining and you had to be on the right side of the sidewalk.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it says in the contract.
I'm exaggerating, of course, but it does have to be like there are specific ways that you have to die for that policy to pay out. And it's usually really cheap. So yeah, if it's super cheap, you kind of want the extra coverage for that specific scenario, go for it. But if you wanted to save some money, that might be one place to save as long as you are covered completely with a policy that doesn't care how you die, right?
Yeah. So. And so like for the group hospital indemnity and the critical illness, it goes back to your health insurance. Are those things already covered in your health insurance and you're just kind of like paying for policy you don't need?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And this, the dismemberment too, that's like if you lose hands, like feet, limbs. Yeah. So this is where disability insurance can come in, which is our next point. So disability insurance, huge fan of disability insurance. There's oftentimes going to be a short-term policy option and a long-term disability coverage option. A lot of times the employer pays for these coverages. So you may not even see it on your paycheck under like something that's a deduction for yourself because your employer is paying for it. Now, something to note though is, and again, disability insurance is, it kicks in and it pays you if you're unable to work in the same capacity because you're either sick or injured for an extended period of time. Short-term typically covers in a year or under, sometimes less. And then long-term disability coverage kicks in if you're still out on claim and picks up where short-term disability leaves off and then pays you for a longer period of time. Depends on the policy, but could go all the way to retirement, which is nice. So that's when things are really not good. You hope you never have to use long-term disability coverage, but it's there if you're not able to go back to work in the same capacity.
I always tell, like, if you're a woman and you're thinking about having kids at any point, get the short-term disability because it will most likely cover maternity leave. Read the policy, not promising mm-hmm. that, but a lot of them will cover maternity leave, which is very important because we don't have, there's no system in place that provides for women who want to take off to have children.
Yep. And also like complications of pregnancy too. Like if you're out for longer than expected, like that's when these policies could kick in too.
These policies are usually not portable either. Like it's the life insurance problem. And a big, big issue with these group ones is that they tend to not have a very favorable definition of disability. So I always recommend, you know, depending on your profession, that you get something called own occupation, which is a rider you can purchase on a disability insurance policy. What it means is I'm disabled, I cannot work in my own occupation as a physician or specifically as like an endocrinologist. Whereas a lot of these group ones, and this is the reason why they're able to do it so cheaply, is because they may have a definition of modified own occupation or just any occupation, which means that like if you can work in a fast food joint, you're not disabled. And so you won't be able to get the payout.
And that could be really catastrophic to your financial plan if you've always thought you were going to make $200,000, $300,000, but now you're only making 20 or 30 because you can only work part-time at, you know, McDonald's or something. That's important to have. So you can purchase an independent policy to supplement on top, not replace, but to sit on top of your employer coverages. Costs for these, typically 1% to 3% of your gross income is typically what I see. You'll be closer to 3% if you're needing to cover a lot more. Like if your employer doesn't cover a lot, if they're at like 40% or 50% of your pay, or you don't have coverage at all and you're covering the whole enchilada, or closer to maybe 1% if you do have a pretty good policy through work. But keep in mind, if your employer pays for the coverage, it is taxable to you when you receive it. That's something to know because if they're saying, hey, yeah, if you're disabled, we'll give you 50% of your pay, that's 50% of your gross pay minus taxes because you're going to be taxed on it when you get the paycheck, basically. So it's not actually 50%. It's more like 40 or 35% at the end of the day when you're looking at it that
way. One thing you should know, too, is that if you're shopping for an individual policy, most insurers do not want you to exceed, like, I would say 50 to 60% of your income and coverage. Like, you can't get all of your income covered. And so if you already have a policy through your job, they're going to see that. And so there mm-hmm. will only be so much that you can purchase individually. So for some folks, strategically, it may make sense to just not get anything through your employer for this particular policy so you can get more of that own occupation. Because again, with the employer one, it's not necessarily going to be own occupation. So you may be able to get more if you just ignore the employer one and get your individual one. And I always have to mention this, pink tax, it is more expensive for women because we have more things that can go wrong with us. We are more likely to get disabled. So it is more expensive for us. Whereas for men, they are more likely to die early. And so life insurance is more expensive for them. There is parity somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're not able to get disability insurance independently because health reasons, whatever the case, there is a lot of times a plus up option with disability insurance at your employer where you can increase coverage. Usually that means you're paying for that increase and the employer continues to pay for their portion. But I do typically recommend looking into that, especially if we're not able to get independent coverage. All right, next up, flexible savings accounts, FSAs. So this is different from HSAs. FSAs, they are also savings accounts for medical expenses and also dependent care. So there's an FSA dependent care option as well. If you and your spouse, or if you are the caregiver for children and you're working, you can have an FSA dependent care account. I think the max is like $5,000 that you can contribute to that.
If, as long as you're not doing MFS, married filing separately.
Yep. Then it's $2,500, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's split in half if you're doing MFS. For the health side of it, it's lower. The amount that you can contribute is lower than an HSA, but that might be the only option you have. Maybe you don't have the access to an HSA because you're not doing a high deductible plan. So an FSA could be the next best thing. And you just want to make sure that you're careful about using what you put into this account because it is a use it or lose it situation where if you don't use these expenses over the course of the year, you lose the benefit. And every employer has some kind of exception where you have maybe 3 extra months going into the new year to use it, or maybe you're able to keep a small dollar amount that gets rolled over into the next year. But you just want to be careful about like knowing what you can use that account for, which typically there's like a list that the provider will give you on what's allowable to use from that account, and make sure that it adds up to what you think you might spend that year, and then spend it over the course of the year.
If it's December and you still have money left in there, check out the FSA store. Just type it into Google, and everything on there is FSA eligible.
Don't waste it.
You are not allowed to have both an FSA and an HSA, by the way. It's one or the other. There are also things called limited purpose FSA, which you can use for dental vision while you have an HSA.
We'll be talking a lot about childcare savings, childcare expenses in a future episode. So stay tuned to that. But FSA dependent care can be a good option to take advantage of if you're spending money for dependent care throughout the year. So don't sleep on that either. That could be a great way to just save on taxes for what you're already spending money on.
Yeah, it is subject to discrimination testing. So some of you, and I've seen this personally, where you get a letter from your employer and they tell you you can't do the full $5,000 because you're considered a highly compensated employee. So you might only be able to contribute like $2,000 or $3,000 because the plan is getting top heavy. It's starting to favor more highly compensated employees. And the rule is that you have to be using the money so that you or your spouse can work or look for work.
Next up, we did already talk about health savings accounts, so we'll skip that.
Can't help myself.
I know. Sim, you can't control her. Next up, though, we had paid time off, which there a lot of times in your benefits package, it will have some details on your paid time off details, vacation days, sick days or sick leave, personal days, like just have an understanding of what that looks like and use your PTO. Use it.
There's a new benefit. I saw this at my husband's last job. He had accrued a lot of PTO that he was never going to use. You can sell it back to the company in some cases if they allow that. So there's like a PTO sell back option, or you can even buy PTO at some companies.
Another option too, sometimes what happens is if you're going out on claim for disability, they'll use PTO first before your short-term disability kicks in, because PTO, you're paid at your current rate, where short-term disability, maybe you're paid at the 60% or 50%. So they might use PTO first, but sometimes folks will use it also, like if they're leaving their job, like for the last 2 weeks or something, where they say, hey, I'm leaving, I'm going to use the rest of my PTO, something like that. That could be an option as well. Number 8 on our list, we had employee assistance programs. What do you know about those, Sim?
I've used those before. It's really cool. It's usually targeted towards like mental health benefits. I don't know all the benefits there are because there's usually a lot, but I know for one, I was able to get like 8 free sessions with a counselor just to like, you know, talk about stuff. And yeah, 8 That's sessions. Great. It was free. If you want to, you can decide to, you know, keep working with that person. Obviously, it won't be free after however many sessions you get, but it's just a cool little benefit that if you have it, it's worth checking out. I used it while I was pregnant. I had some like pregnancy anxiety because I had a lot of miscarriages. And so I used that. I talked to someone for 8 sessions just to like chill out a little bit.
I love that. I think that's really great. And this kind of goes along with something I said in our last episode, the slay your budget for jingling your budget bells, taking advantage of what you already have. If this is already part of your benefits program, like take a look at what those extra benefits are. And take note of that. So if you ever wanted to take advantage of those things particular, you come back to it and you don't spend money out of pocket to do those things that you were potentially going to spend money on.
Yeah, I think they have like tobacco cessation programs or like programs for, you know, diabetics. You can like maybe meet with a nutritionist. So there's some, you know, some of those things built in.
Now, tuition reimbursement. This is another one that we see a lot in our student loan planning conversations because some employers provide some kind of tuition reimbursement as part of their benefits package. It's basically the employer is able to give you up to $5,250 tax-free. So it's not taxable to you as income and you don't pay taxes on it when you receive it. It's basically a bonus or a benefit to you to put towards your student loans, which may or may not be a super great benefit, depending on if you're going towards PSLF, because if you're just dumping the $5,250 into the student loan, maybe you didn't need to because you need those monthly payments going towards PSLF. But there are strategic ways you could use it, especially if they pay this benefit to you monthly, where it reduces like your required monthly payment. And then as long as you pay the rest of that required monthly payment for the month, then that month is essentially free or discounted towards your forgiveness journey. Is there anything else you would say on the tuition reimbursement?
Yeah, I've seen this with some employers where, like, let's say you're using it because you want to get some education. You're going back to school, working on a master's. If you leave your job within like 1 or 2 years, they may require you to pay back a portion or all of it.
Yeah.
So there's like always the gotcha, the fine print. Do you have to pay any of it back or can you just get your education and leave?
Right. Yeah. So that's also like a good overarching point too. Like tuition reimbursement could be for loan repayment, but it could also be for purchasing outright a program to further your education or a certification or something. Has to be approved, but definitely know what the strings are attached if you take advantage of that benefit and make sure that you don't have to pay that benefit back if you plan on leaving in the near future. Now, retirement plans is another benefit that will likely be outlined in your employer benefits package, which we talk a lot about retirement savings. So we know, you know, definitely go for the match, at least getting that rolling, and then work on getting up to the max, which is $23,000 for 2024. I think next year it's going to be $23,500. That's the preliminary number for the max next year, but 401k plan out the outline that they'll give you will also list out like vesting schedules. So that just means like if they're matching into your 401k, vesting for them means are they going to take that back if you were to leave within a certain time period? So a lot of times it's like within a year or 3 years or could be 5 years. There's a lot of different ways that they can build a 401k plan and they can claw the money back that they contributed, not that you contributed, but that they contributed if you leave before that vesting period, which is important to note.
You are always fully vested in your own contributions.
Yes, rightfully so. Now, legal plans. I think you put this one on the list.
Yes, this is such a great hack if your company offers this, and I've also done this too. If they offer a legal plan, usually is a great way to do some basic estate planning. And so how it works is it's almost like an HMO. You have to go in network. So there has to be like participating attorneys, but certain services are covered. What I did with mine, so we had a legal plan. I think we were paying like $9 a pay period at the time, and it was a monthly pay. So it's like $9 a month. And so we were paying $9 a month and we did our basic estate planning documents. So last will and testament, guardianship provisions, advanced medical directive, and financial power of attorney. We did all of this and we paid nothing other than the $9 a month we were paying for the benefit because we used an in-network attorney. And it was a great attorney. I looked them up and they had like all these great reviews and they were just down the street from my house and I saw them in person. There's a lot you can do like online now, but you know, I'm a little bit old school. Sometimes it's nice just to like shake someone's hand across the table. But yeah, it was such a great benefit because, you know, what does an estate plan cost now if you were to go do it with an attorney? It's probably going to be, you know, at least four figures. Yeah.
Yeah. And estate planning documents are also very personal. They can be very personal. Like you can make them as tailored to you and as specific as you want them to be. But if you're just needing to get something like safe in place for now, and then you want to be more specific later, you want to just save a little bit on like the initial cost of getting something in place for now, like the legal plan is a great way to go. My mom did this as well, where she used her plan. She works for the library system here in Georgia. She got all of her end of life documents, like healthcare directive documents, like all of that in place for free because it was through her employer. For free, asterisk or star with like what she paid out of her paycheck, but definitely worth it for what she needed. And check that off the to-do list, right? Because that's part of a comprehensive financial plan is getting those documents in place. And if you can get them in place easier or cheaper with your employer benefits plan, great. Let's go for it.
Yeah, even for something like a trust, I don't think you can get a trust set up for free. I think that would be like crazy if you could. If you know of such a plan, by the way, let me know. But I think you can get a trust discounted, which is still worthwhile. And I know that even if you don't use an attorney in network, you can still maybe get like a partial subsidy if you like just have someone you have to use. And usually there's other benefits in the legal plan. I mostly prefer it because of the estate plan document piece of it. But I think they can offer you like, you know, representation for like a traffic ticket or, you know, some little things like that. Yeah. There's a lot of other little legal, it's a legal plan. So there's a lot of little things you can get out of it, but primarily it's like, what's the most expensive piece is your estate plan.
Yeah. This, talking about these benefits, it kind of makes me also think about like this, not secret, but like the quiet benefits of some credit cards, where like some credit cards offer like travel insurance automatically just because you paid for it with your credit card. Same thing with like some credit cards will offer, what is it, like auto insurance on rentals or like certain protections on rental cars, things like that. So it is kind of cool to see like, hey, if I was to really drill down and know and understand what my benefits are at work, how can that help me save money on the things that I'm already going to be spending money on? Or how can that help just give me some peace of mind and knowing that, hey, if this thing were to happen, like I'm protected or I've got something I can lean on for support, which is what
Megan, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah.
I didn't check to see if my credit card offers travel insurance. Megan knows I have a big trip coming up next week and then I'm doing a conference Q1 of next year and I paid for travel insurance.
Yeah.
And I didn't even check to see if my credit card offered it. Oops.
Well, it, again, with a little asterisk, like every credit card is different. So you got to just know what your credit card is offering or what kind of protection. Because it might not be the kind of protection that you were needing or wanting or desiring. So those are, again, kind of coming down to like, hey, use what you've got, understand what you've got and lean on those things when you need them. But I'm so excited for you to come. She's coming to Atlanta next week, guys. She's going to be staying with us at the McGuire Manor. We're going to be having a good old time, ready for a finance conference that the team is going to.
This is her one and only pitch to convince me to move to Atlanta, A-Town.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Y'all know I've got my list of things that I'm going to be throwing her away to try to get her to come here.
So we have one more thing on our list, and I'm really excited to hear Megan talk about it, which is pet insurance. As I'm sitting here watching poor Willa in a cone, I'm sure there's a story there.
So Willa, I think she ran off. Willa is my Bernedoodle puppy. She's 7 months old. I also have a dog, a Springer Spaniel, Mr. Boone. He's my first child, my emotional support dog. Not really, but he is my best friend. And Willa is our newest addition. She is crazy. I'll just say that. I think people say that second kids are like wild. That is absolutely true with my second dog child. But pet insurance. So I'm an advocate of insurance. I like to protect myself against things that are unknown or things that would put me in a hard position or like make you have to think about money in a really difficult situation. And man, Willa girl, she is giving me a run for my money with just all the stuff that she puts us through. She is somebody who likes to eat everything right now. That's her little, her trait. So she has a cone on right now, not because she got spayed, but because she had to go in for surgery to get a blockage taken out. She had basically ripped off the top of a toy and swallowed it without us knowing. You know, the toy was just in the toy bin. She ripped off the top, swallowed the whole thing, whole top of it. And she didn't throw it up. She didn't go out the other end. So she had one day where like she was in a lot of pain. She wasn't able to pass it. And we ended up having to take her to the ER that night and she had to go through surgery. So she had surgery. It was very expensive. Vets, I love you guys so much and you are worth every penny though. So that surgery, I'll just say the numbers. It was going to be about $5,500 for the surgery and the hospital costs, everything. She's great. She's wearing a cone now. She's got sutures or like stitches all up her stomach for where they were able to extract it. And she's on a lot of meds right now. But $5,500 as an unexpected cost would have really been unfortunate. And I know a lot of folks, emergency savings is not something that everybody has or they're working on building. So if I was in a position where I couldn't pay that $5,500, that would have been really upsetting. And vets talk about this a lot, like the mental or emotional load of like having to make life or death decisions. And sometimes it comes down to the money. And so I have pet insurance, thank goodness. And I was able to, I do have emergency savings, but the pet insurance was really great to lean on because it covers, after you pay the deductible, it pays up to a certain percentage of the costs. So I got quite a bit, probably about 70% of the surgery covered through my insurance. And I've only been paying it for, what is she, like 4 months, 5 months? So very worthwhile. Wow. That's a long story.
You're getting your money's worth.
I know. But I
feel like she just had something happen like last month too.
It was the same thing. She swallowed something else. She was able to throw that up and she just needed, she had like upset stomach at that time. But this time there was no turning back. It was already working its way through the digestive tract. A lot of TMI here, but this is what I went through over the past week and what we're in recovery for right now. But that's just like an example of insurance. Like, I hope I don't have to use pet insurance, right? Because that means my dogs are really healthy, happy. I hope I don't use health insurance. I hope I don't use auto insurance. I hope I don't wreck my car and have to use auto insurance. But like, this stuff happens and you never know when it's going to happen. It's going to cost money. A lot of folks listening to this are providers. You're either a physician, a vet, a dentist. Like, you guys know that your services cost money, rightfully so. You went to school for a long time to do this profession and to be leaned on in these capacities when these things happen. So insurance can really help just financially protect you from things that are unexpected and preserve emergency savings as much as possible. So if you have pet insurance as a benefit through your employer, look at it, especially if you've got puppies. Get it when they're puppies. So there's no like, what is it? I think they can exclude things pre-existing conditions. That's what I was looking
pre-existing,
for.
Yeah.
But highly, highly recommend pet insurance after the week I've had. That's the last benefit I think we're going to talk about.
Geez, I didn't realize that pets were like as expensive as children. I guess that's a good use of the phrase fur baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I really do. Are like I mean, babies. They are my babies for now. But all these benefits, again, protection, right? Protection measures against unexpected, against catastrophic things. Yes, they're boring to talk about. Yeah, that big package that they give you kind of stinks to thumb through, but do it. It's going to give you some peace of mind. It's going to provide that protection if you need it. And if you want some help reviewing those things, like throw it over to your planner. If you work with us at SLP Wealth, we can thumb through that benefits package and make sure that you're implementing what you need to implement. If you have an advisor in your life, that's something that you can lean on them for. You know, someone in the family that knows finance or knows your situation could be an accountability partner here. But don't sleep on benefits. Open enrollment time. This is the time that you elect those benefits for the year. So it's kind of a one-time thing for each year.
Yeah, it's like you're kind of locking it in for the following year. And there's no way that we can like go over all of them just because every company is so different. There can be some like really cool perks just that your company offers. So it really does pay to just take a look. You only have to do this once a year. So take a look or have us take a look. But I think it's really a fun area of planning, getting your life together. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, getting that base of your pyramid, that foundational layer of your financial plan, like really tight and controlled, and that'll help you be able to focus on other things like growing and building your wealth and spending money on what you want to spend on, like vacations, not pet surgeries.
Not just insurance. The things that matter. So,
well, thanks for listening in today. Thank you, Sim, as always, for joining me and chatting through some financial basics and timely things. I hope everyone listening has a lovely weekend coming up, and we'll catch you on the next one.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.